This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
So welcome everyone to this final installment of our series celebrating National Poetry Month. Glad you braved the weather and that you're here. And so I want to introduce our speaker today. It was just very excited that we are able to have the 2024 Poet Laureate of Texas, Amanda Johnston, with us. So, yes, just right up the road from Pflugerville. So, yeah. Well, that's where she's currently staying or living. I'm assuming you're still there. Yeah, but let me tell you a little bit about Amanda. She was born in East St. Louis. She was raised in Austin. She earned an MFA in creative writing from the University of Southern Maine. She's the author of two chapbooks, GUAP, is that right? G-U-A-P, and Lock and Key, and also the full-length collection of poetry called Another Way to Say Enter. Her work has appeared in numerous online and print publications, among them Callaloo, Poetry Magazine, Puerto de Sol, Muzzle, and the anthologies Furious Flower, Seeding the Future of African-American Poetry, and Women of Resistance, Poems for a New Feminism. She's received fellowships, grants, and awards from Cave Canem, Hedgebrook, Tosio, the Kentucky Foundation for Women, the Watermill Center, and the Austin International Poetry Festival. She's a former board president of the Cave Canem Foundation and a member of the Afro-Latchen Poets and co-founder of Black Poets Speak Out and founder of Torch Literary Arts, a nonprofit dedicated to amplifying Black women writers in Central Texas and beyond. So, needless to say, she is a busy, busy woman, and I'm so glad that she's able to be with us today. So, Amanda, I'm just going to turn it over to you. She's going to read some of her work. She and I are going to have a little conversation, and then we're going to open it up for you to have some conversation with her. So, you've got your mic. Okay, great.
All right. Can y'all hear me okay? Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mona, for that introduction. And thank you so much to everyone for allowing me to come in and share and talk about poetry with y'all this morning. Obviously, it's something I love to do, being Texas Poet Laureate, which is a huge honor. I'm the 2024 Texas Poet Laureate. So we're just getting into my year of activity. I've got some great things planned. So as those begin to take more shape, I look forward to sharing them with y'all. But spoiler alert, it'll involve sharing poems and writing poems for each other. So maybe work on some drafts and get ahead of me before I call Mona and say, let's do that thing I was talking about. But I wanted to just talk with y'all a little bit this morning before I share some of my original poetry and just talk about the power of literature, poetry, and verse. When I was very young, I credit my mother for inspiring me to become a poet because she gave me poetry books. She gave me Shel Silverstein in particular, and I brought the book that she gave me. This book is over 40 years old, A Light in the Attic. It is worn with love, as you can see, and I've had people, you know, offer to refurbish it and repair it for me. And I said, don't you dare. That's what I shook my head. Don't you dare. All the scars and wounds on this book just means I loved it really, really hard. And it meant a lot to me. And the poetry in it, though, one thing that Shel Silverstein, I take it you're familiar with Shel Silverstein. If you're not, you can find his books still today in all any bookstore. But his writing was, while I was very young, intriguing because it was a little daring. You know, it was different than the Golden Book nursery rhymes and other poetry that I had been exposed to in my very young life. It was taking a risk to say something different, right? And that really inspired me to think differently and to discover the world in a unique way. So I actually wanted to share a couple of poems from Shel just to point that out. And then now as an adult going back to Shel, I teach Shel when I'm teaching graduate level workshops. So in MFA programs, I'll bring out Shel Silverstein to study craft. What he does with rhyme scheme, allusion, imagery, alliteration is all master masterful. And when you're able to do that, and it can speak then to the youngest of us, to the oldest of us, and carry interesting meanings across the generations. So this poem from A Light in the Attic is titled The Little Boy and the Old Man. Said the little boy, "Sometimes I drop my spoon." Said the little old man, "I do that too." The little boy whispered, "I wet my pants." "I do that too," laughed the little old man. Said the little boy, "I often cry." The old man nodded, "So do I." "But worst of all," said the boy, "it seems grown-ups don't pay attention to me." And he felt the warmth of a wrinkled old hand. "I know what you mean," said the little old man. Come on. How wonderful is that? And I mean, in the poem directly linking our, you know, the youngest of us to the oldest of us, but that's a great example of how the poetry can speak to us, no matter our age, no matter where we are, our background, our lives. That's something all of us can relate to. So I just, I'm stay in awe of what Shell was able to do through poetry and how poetry continues to speak through me and to me in that way. I wanted to also show, like, Shell was also very forward-thinking and progressive in his work. This he was an illustrator as well. And so he drew this picture art poem, and it's of the Union for Children's Rights is what that says. And so encouraging children to advocate for themselves, right? And the signs read, "Strike, strike for children's rights, longer weekends, shorter school hours, higher allowances, less baths and showers, no Brussels sprouts, more root beer, and 17 summer vacations a year. If you're ready to strike, line up right here." That's the internet. How wonderful is that? And inclusive, on the next page, there's a poem that is in sign language, that has sign language included, right? And it says, Deaf Donald, meet Talky Susie, but, and then he signs, was all he could do. And Susie said, "Donald, I sure do like you, but sign was all he could do." And Sue and asked Donald, "Do you like me too?" But sign was all he could do. "Goodbye then, Donald, I'm leaving you," but sign was all he could do. And she left forever, so she never knew that what he signed means I love you. Sorry, so now you're all gonna run back and read Shel Silverstein again with fresh eyes, and all that you've been able to learn and acquire in your experience until adulthood, revisit Shel and see the magic of what he did and gifted us truly. I'll read one last poem. So this book was, everything on it was published posthumously. So after he passed away, and the last poem in the book reads, "When I'm Gone." When I am gone, what will you do? Who will write and draw for you? Someone smarter, someone new, someone better, maybe you. Ah, love, 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 Shel. Thank y'all for letting me share that. All right, to the side. So I'm gonna read a couple poems from my book, Another Way to Say Enter. Sadly, my book is out of print, but I believe in giving it away. So there are a lot of poems from the book online for free. You can go to my website, amandajohnson.com, and see poems there. And also just search the web. A lot of my work is published, but I'm gonna read a couple poems from that book and then a few poems from my work in progress, which will be coming out sometime. That's the nature of publishing, sometimes. All right. So this first poem is called Domicile. Are you familiar with the incredible R&B singer, vocalist, Luther Vandross? Okay, good. This ain't, depending on the audience, Gen Z, not so much. A chair is not a house, and a house is not a home. Luther Vandross. Tucked under an overpass, a bedroom with no walls. A soiled rug divides highway soot and city from what is claimed as home. In the center, a queen bed with fitted sheets and a turned down comforter. Dusty pillows wait for tired heads under tons of concrete and steel, trusting the weight of the world will not come crashing down. Is love made in that bed? Does the world watch and discover this bead of life on display? Its glint of yes, this too is a life worth sharing. I consider my home cookie cutter stability in a shaky market. How would my life fit under a bridge? Would there be room for the fridge, racks of shoes, a second living room set? Is the TV enough? Its blank face reflecting our empty arms, wayward dreams. Would my heart remember, for better or worse, for richer or poorer, the kiss of vows that bind us through what may come, pillows on the bed we've made. Thank you. So that poem I wrote after, I'll also say this, I am very much the I in my poem. So some poets, you know, they'll say, do not project that the speaker in the poem is also the poet who's reading the poem. But if I'm reading my poems that I wrote, I'm the I. So it is either something I've directly experienced, or even if it's a persona poem where I'm writing in the voice of someone else, it still comes through my body and through my lens and experience. So there's still a touch of me on it either way. But this was something that I saw in Pittsburgh, a complete bedroom set underneath a very busy overpass. And it gave me pause to think about my life, my love, my dear husband now of 24 years, and what we will or will not withstand, but we don't know what's coming for us. We just know that we are together and that that too could be our bedroom. And I looked at it and I said, yes, yes, this is a life worth sharing. Let's see. Hand to mouth. Busy hand split 2-day-old chicken in half. I pull spine and rib from meat. I make this small body, this bird new that must be fed again to hungry mouths at my table, our winged loves who chirp on phones and laugh about whatever isn't killing them. I boil water. Add worn chicken and burn my fingers, a small sacrifice. Bone catches in my daughter's throat. This food I gift, a resurrected carcass, gritty with prayer to postpone dirt on the dying. So I wrote that poem during the wave of the Black Lives Matter movement and seeing my family literally have to digest everything that was happening in the world at once, and having two daughters, they're grown now, but you know, at the time they're in our home, and seeing them struggle at times, right? So there's metaphor in the poem behind what we are offered to eat, what we have left to eat, what we make do with, and still find joy to laugh at whatever isn't killing us in a time that was of great sorrow. And still is, that we're still healing from. This next poem is called No Good Deed Goes Unpunished. I see the white man driving next to me and consider every scenario of this moment as we approach a red light and what's at risk if I lower my window, expose my daughter and myself to the unknown repercussions of kindness. I calculate the risk involved to tell him his gas cap is open. His face, a concoction of morning traffic and time, ignores my initial honk and gesture toward his tank. My daughter asks, is it safe? I assure her I'll smile, be soft, do all the right things that in no way guarantee will survive this human interaction should he see danger, a threat in my concerned Black woman face. I honk again. I refuse to live in a world where we're too afraid to do what's right. The man turns toward our car, aware now of our existence and the immediate future rests in his lap and what's beyond my understanding. He nods and drives off. gas cap dangling. My daughter corrects me. No, Mama, the gas. Is it safe? And I'm lost in meaning. What is safe in this burning for survival? Let's see here. I'll read this. So one of my favorite poems ever in the whole world is Lucille Clifton. She's passed away some years ago, but I was very fortunate to have met her for a brief moment in life. And she just shared so much with me in those few minutes and a lifetime of knowledge and care for me and for everyone through her poetry. So this poem is after Lucille Clifton's poem, Cutting Greens. My poem is titled Peeling Potatoes. I palm each spud in my hand like a rock or newborn baby's head. Under rushing water, my wrist turned up toward the blade. I cut away eyes and skin, exposing the white meat to mash into soft submission. I don't always peel them. I want the brown to flavor my pot with gritty earth rooted in blackness. Jesus be a prayer. Jesus be a fence. Jesus be a moat. Jesus be a back door. Jesus be a friend. Jesus be a payday. Jesus be a hookah. Jesus be a minute. Jesus be a minute. Jesus be a credit, Jesus be a discount, Jesus be a lover, Jesus be a kiss, Jesus be a nap, Jesus be a car, Jesus be a dance, Jesus be a drink, Jesus be a jam, Jesus be a no, Jesus be an exit, Jesus be a home. Jesus be a Monday, Jesus be a Friday, Jesus be a vacay, Jesus be a today, Jesus be a stillness, Jesus be a coffee, Jesus be a stillness, Jesus be a minute. Jesus be a minute. Jesus be a miracle. Jesus be amen. Two more from the book. So this poem I wrote for my daughter after she was born, for my youngest daughter. So she was born. It's called First Song for Ayana. She wailed and my heart stood still as the doctor dangled her head down and bloody like a fish caught between the muck and pull of my churning water and vine creeping awkwardly up to this blurry life of tears and loose soil. The delivery room held fast while her silence echoed off defibrillators, nursing hands, and her father tending my hollow earthbound body, waiting for his daughter's first solo in a chorus of furrowed brows. He wanted to hear her wail with a quick slap and desperate breath and sound, at least a whimper of newness, not this eternal pause of her wide eyes questioning yes or no to this world of uncertainties. She wailed, and my heart stood still in that resounding yes, yes, she would stay in this imperfect place with all of its cobwebs and stars. Here in the pain of birth, she wailed, and her song began. Yeah, last poem from the book that I'll share. I embrace you after Joy Harjo. Joy Harjo was one of my faculty members in my MFA program at Stone Coast, University of Southern Maine. She's also the first Indigenous poet to ever serve as US Poet Laureate. I write this poem in honor of her. I embrace you. I embrace you, my difficult and bright yellow joy. I embrace you. You are my dusk and dawn anew. I know you, my reflection, my face. I embrace you with arms I would open to a lover and a friend. You are my beating heart. I take you for the innocent who scream happiness loud as cannon fire. I take you in my mouth. Clean water runs through my veins. I embrace you, joy, as you were born in my likeness through hands welcoming touch. I embrace you, I embrace you, I embrace you. I am not afraid to know sorrows. I am not afraid to feel pain. I am not afraid to laugh. I am not afraid to sing. I am not afraid to be other. I am not afraid to be here. I am not afraid to be light. I am not afraid to dance, to dance, to dance. Joy, you have spun me and I showed you my waist. You have held me and I release all my weight. You have cried with me, and I watch our water join. I give myself to you, joy. You are the light on my face, the magic behind my eyes, my ears, my voice, my belly, my heart, my heart, my heart, my heart, my heart. Come here, joy. I am alive, and you are the reason why.
Thank you.
All right. So part of the themes in my poetry and writing is to, you know, better understand the world that I live in, to understand the feelings that I have, no matter what they are. Poetry and verse is a way for me to work and write my way through that, right? So I encourage poets and all artists, I'm also a visual artist, to first work for discovery in yourselves. When I do the work of tending to myself, understanding what is challenging me, what conflict is there, what joy and happiness is there, just being present in all of those feelings, that allows me to be vulnerable in my work. And then when I share that with the world, my goal, my hope is that others see an opportunity to do the same. And then a connection is made through the bridge of that work. So for me, the work is all about connection and community. I could write everything and keep it in my house. I don't have to come out and share it, but I enjoy it. And I'm grateful to be here at St. David's because that's what's important for me, is getting the work to the other 50%. I can only ever do 50% in creating the work. The other 50% happens when you show up to receive it. So thank you for being in conversation with me and being here to receive these poems. I'm going to share a few from my manuscript in progress, which is titled Active Threat. And some of these poems, you know, they're still very raw. They still have notes on them and everything, because I'm still figuring out my feelings and emotions related to these moments that I'm trying to capture in poetry. But raise your hand if you remember the serial bombings in 2018 that happened here in Central Texas. Okay, I just was reading in Houston yesterday, and I read some of these poems, and there was one or two people in the audience who knew about the serial bombings that happened here in Central Texas. So, you know, it was a moment of realization that something so traumatic that happened here, and, you know, we lost people, people were killed during that tragic time. The news of it barely, if at all, touched two and a half hours away, right? So one of the things for me is, through my poetry and writing, is to also capture the times so that people don't forget, right? So these poems, there are poems in this manuscript that speak to that moment that we experienced together here in Central Texas, and also how, because of, you know, race and class, and again, the news not sharing it as much as they probably could have, we also were experiencing two different realities at the same time, where my family, my Black family, and my household was, you know, hypersensitive to what was happening because the first bombings happened in Black and Brown communities. And then I had friends who were not of those communities who didn't understand why I wasn't feeling up to going out or hanging out, or why I was depressed and sad because of what was happening. So yeah, some, I just wanted to say, for some of those poems, we'll speak to that. Let's see here. So I'll start with this short poem. Two Americas. A friend says online shopping is great. You come home and there are packages waiting for you like little gifts. You should do it. You deserve it. It's so much fun. My daughter is afraid to open the door. I check the front yard for tripwire, mumble a little prayer. Take me. Take me. It begins. March 2nd, 2018, the first package bomb detonates in Pflugerville, Texas. What does a bomb sound like when everything is exploding?
The coffee pot drips into morning with the eerie buzz of cars on the verge of collision. The world and its infinite brink of life and breath in and out, small bursts of the day to day. And then a loud note cuts through a quiet street, announcing a terror that has always been, is awake and hungry. Untitled, for Shamika Wilson, mother of Draylen Mason. And one day the sky opens and a voice says now, and after decades of church on Sunday, Bible study on Wednesday, grace and faith over every meal and heads bowed, you look up and scream no, and it's done. The hand that hovers eternally points its long finger and touches the body and the armor wrapped with faith, wrapped with prayer, wrapped in the blood, and now soaked in loss and grieving, goes quiet, so quiet you could fool yourself into thinking it's all a dream. And when they ask me how I made it through, I'll tell them, I slept until my body rose. I read and listened to music. I danced and cried freely. I let the spider go. I killed the scorpion. I worried about myself. I lied and said I was fine. I was fine and breathing. I considered my needs. I welcomed my desire. I didn't pay the rent. I ate the chocolate. I drank the wine. I bowed to those who fed me. I kissed the hand that could take it away. I hid my teeth. I wrote a poem I could live in. Just two more poems. So this poem is a little different, wrote, but who's familiar with Gardner Betts? Gardner Betts is a juvenile detention center down Congress and on South Congress. So it's right there and now a very trendy area. They're building the big fancy HEB right there at Old Torf and Congress. It's literally across the street right there. So this is a poem I wrote about my relationship to that space. On the other side, for the children of Gardner Betts. From my window, I see the children's prison. Juvenile detention sounds softer than it is. A younger version of me, pregnant and full of fire, sat in that box weighing my future, the unnatural order of things. What a waste, one teacher shook her head upon my withdrawal. Just another insert stereotype. If only her mother, if only her father, history repeating itself again, my daughter churning inside my womb. 30 years later, on the other side of that street, I watch from the opulent hotel as little futures are pushed down the pipeline of forgotten children. I lean closer into my reflected eye, see the gritty residue on the not so distant past speckled on my face. And my last poem is What Matters. A friend once said, love just means you'll be there. I remember hospital rooms, machines humming in the key of life, doctors with thin percentages of hope and heavy brows, late nights alone in a parked car screaming into the void, how we empty ourselves of grief and climb love's staircase just to hold hands, just in case. Thank you.
So Amanda and I are going to have just a little brief conversation, and then we certainly want to give you some time to ask your questions or to have your response. I mean, I could hear a lot of, So, yeah.
That's how I know it's reaching you. So yeah, do that.
Test a lot of spaces. But we had a lovely conversation this past week just to check in about how we wanted to use our time together. And I took some notes. And one of the things I remember you saying, and you touched on it a little bit when you talked about how you write what you feel, but just wondering if you could say a little bit more about that poetry really brings forth the ineffable.
Yes.
That's the word, ineffable in us.
Yes. So. There's points like, I can only do so much, you know, I'll be writing a poem, but how did that poem get inside of me? How was it that I saw that image in a way, walking around with, you know, thousands of people out somewhere? Or I'll tell you a really great one. I was driving down 35, looked to my right, this is a poem I'm working on, and saw, of all things, a hearse that was painted with stripes, rainbows, and polka dots covering the whole thing. Very Austin thing to see, maybe, but unusual to see in the gray, you know, day-to-day fog of morning traffic. So what was it in me that caused me to take note of that when someone else may be just driving by, you know, preoccupied with themselves? That I have no explanation for, but I welcome and receive it. And I feel that touch on me every day. I also look up and specifically thank my granny who passed away some years ago. I feel her presence in my life always. Sometimes smiling and patting my back, sometimes saying, girl, what are you doing? Go over there. But I feel her. And so the power of the word comes from a place that is inescribable, but that's not my job to name that thing. It's my job to receive it and honor that that gift.
That makes me aware that in that whole process there is a mindfulness or a level of seeing that not only do we, or that you as a poet or that artists bring that forth, but also that there is a layer of just always of openness, of being mindful, of being present.
Yes.
You know, and I think, I mean, I wouldn't call myself a poet, but I think there's an invitation for all of us, you know, to have that level of awareness or that level of mindfulness. And I think it's so hard to do in a culture where it demands so much from our attention. And so for me, I think poetry is it's a respite. It's,
yes.
You know, yeah.
It's a moment of peace. It's a moment of stillness, whether writing or receiving, just taking time to read poems. There's some really great online poetry platforms, including my nonprofit, Torch Literary Arts. We publish poetry, fiction, short stories, and scripts. But there's other places like The Slowdown, that was started by former U.S. Poet Laureate Tracy K. Smith to do just that, slow down for just a few moments. And it's free. You subscribe, it comes to your in your inbox, and it just gives you a moment to settle, push back all that is trying to preoccupy us, and receive the gift of creation, imagination, and to consider something outside of yourself for that moment, right? So you said we can become very self-absorbed, but when we are engaging, you know, I'm talking about art specifically in poetry, it's a moment where we have to sit with someone else, the poet, the subject, considering the world that we live in, whatever is all encompassing in that work, we have to be a part of it. And that, it, for me, is the most powerful part, is the community. I was saying that earlier. What the art does for me is to help create community, even in our moments of solitude. When we are engaging with the work, we know we're not alone.
That reminds me, when you made that last statement there, I think it was Rilke who talked about, the poet Rilke, who talked about being a community of solitudes. And I'm a big fan of Parker Palmer, but I don't think he's the one who coined the phrase, but often I've heard poetry talked about as the third thing. And that's kind of what came to mind as you were talking, that it's that another voice, that there's a, that it creates community, that there's a, it's, it almost becomes a safe space, you know, for two people to, or a group of people, you know, to have a conversation or to be in some kind of relationship as they relate to the poem, you know, rather than just sitting down and saying, so tell me what you think about, you know, violence, or tell me what you think about the bombings, you know, in 2018, that it's a, it's a third thing. It creates a space.
Yeah. We're called to it. And the thing in that poem, I embrace you, you know, where I get to the part, my heart, my heart, my heart, my heart, my heart. That is an iambic pentameter, the metric foot, right? Da-dun, 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 which is your heartbeat. Ba-bum, 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 ba-bum. So, you know, it's one of those things. Poetry is naturally in us. We learn how to communicate through, you know, song and by someone reading to us these nursery rhymes, like my mother gave me Shell and, you know, Golden Books. That's how we learn language and how to communicate. But even before that, as infants, what makes an infant start rocking when music comes on? You know, what makes them, if you start clapping, that they start clapping with you? That's poetry moving through us as part of our natural rhythms. It's also part of why, you know, I know a lot of people be like, oh, I'm not a poet. I don't understand poetry. And sometimes will be even fearful, like, you know, get away from me. I think it's not the poem. It's the power that you feel when you are engaging with it, because we also turn to poetry in great moments of our lives, meaning, you know, weddings, children being born, when people pass and we're mourning, we turn to poetry. That's a common place where poems are shared. So in these most impactful moments in our lives, poems are there because they're already a part of us. Mm. And I don't think it's, that's not a coincidence.
Right.
That it's there.
Yes. So you talked some or touched on just that poetry and its connection to community organizing. And I'm wondering if you could say a little bit more. I mean, because in some of the poems that I heard you share, if maybe not all of them, there is kind of an activist dimension mm-hmm. there. And so can you talk a little bit about the connection between poetry and art and just community organizing, activism, because I think as people who read poetry or take poetry in, certainly it can get me in touch with my feelings, or it can calm me, or it can create that space for introspection. But there are also times when I read poetry that it disturbs me, mm-hmm. you know, and then it kind of prompts me to action.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I mean, like I mentioned, for me, poetry is my responsibility to also document the times through my experience mm-hmm. of the times, and being in this body as a Black woman raised in the South, and everything that has touched me, and, you know, I can add on descriptors, you know, and parts of my identities, that all informs my experience in this world. So if I were to say, choose to write poems, say, I don't want to write about anything that was difficult in my life, or anything that is social justice, you know, related, that someone might think is, if I'm writing about protests or activism, if I said, I don't want to do that, and I'm only going to write poems about flowers, that is still a choice that I have made that is centered around social justice activism. Silence is a choice. Mm. Mm. And that is a damaging choice, in my opinion, when there is so much important work that needs to be done. However you show up for yourself and then for your community is exactly what was needed in the world. You don't have to be a poet and write poems like me that speak to, you know, issues in the world. But if you, like my mother, who was a union steward, she was in the CWA, Communication Workers of America. So I was also raised in a very social justice minded house that was very involved with equity and, you know, inclusivity and fighting for your rights, right? That's the house that I was raised in. My mother is not a poet, but she did that work. And I feel like there was a craft to how she did that, how she was able to show up in her community and raise her children as a single mother and make space for art to exist. That was her artistic practice, right? But I feel the most strongly is, you know, whatever it is that you are called to say, the minute you silence yourself, then the forces that work against you have won. You have to say the thing, however it comes out. If it comes out in service, if it comes out in art, if it comes out in song, if it comes out in gardening, if it comes out, you know. I would often say too, like I write these poems and, you know, and I would read them at different like protests or events and things. And I would say if I was a doctor, then I'd be doing Doctors Without Borders. You know, it's a matter of service. Mm-hmm. For whatever your talent is, just to be of service.
So last question, and then I'll ask folks to sort of have theirs, offer theirs. So just a little bit more about what it means to be a poet laureate. So
I'm still figuring that out. It's still very new.
What are your plans for us? As I mean, you mentioned a little bit, and I know you talked about a grant that you are working on or that you
submitted. Yes.
So, so what are your plans for us as the poet laureate of Texas?
Well, I'm very honored to be in, to have this distinction. I believe I'm the 68th poet laureate of the state of Texas. So Texas has a long history of having poet laureates. For example, in Illinois, Angela Jackson is the fifth poet laureate.
Wow.
And she's the current poet laureate there. So Texas has had a long history of having poets, poet laureates, and I'm honored to be in that number. However, I am also the first Black woman to be Texas poet laureate. Thank you. So I, if anything, I want that to be, and in recent years, in the last 10 years, I have to say they've done an incredible job of opening up the opportunity, and there have been more people of color coming in to fill the role. But as the first Black woman, I just want to further encourage people of color, people with different backgrounds. However you got to Texas, you're here now. And we want to embrace you, celebrate you. And if you are a poet, I want you to see this as a space for you. The laureateship of the entire state can be for you. So definitely amplifying poetry across the state. The program that I have planned, I am applying for funding because I believe in paying people for their labor. That includes artists and poets. So the project is called Praise Song for the People, a celebration of everyday Texans. And it is a program where I will commission 70 poets across the state. So 10 poets in each of the 7 regions of Texas to write original praise poems that are celebrating everyday Texans that have made an impact in their lives. So the focus not to be on a celebrity necessarily or a larger, more well-known person, but you know, your teacher, your neighbor, someone in your community who is doing an incredible act that is making an impact in your life and in your local community, we should write praise poems for them. They should be celebrated and amplified. Mm-hmm. So that will all live on a website, but then, and that will take place this fall. And then in the spring, there'll be information and kits sent to all K-12 schools in Texas to encourage the youth to write praise poems. So they should be writing poems celebrating the people that have already touched their lives at such a young age.
Wonderful. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So you're all going to be asked to write a praise poem.
Yeah. Get ready.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got about 10 minutes or so before we need to close up to get to the 11:15 service. But questions or comments that you have for Amanda?
No, absolutely. I have a poem that is also about that moment and in this active threat manuscript that I'm working on. It is a moment that I don't know that will ever... healing isn't always the right word for me. Understanding isn't even the right word for me. But a moment that I can live and process as part of this experience that we share together. And that having this moment right now in this room matters. And so that's the gem. That's the moment that I will always take away, is that even through our worst times, how we as people come together is something that is, that's always the focus on me. Otherwise, I feel like I'm letting evil be the loudest voice in the room, where it has no place in the room. But you, I love that you brought that up, because Amazing Grace, you know, yes, song is poetry. And do you know who wrote Amazing Grace? Right. Yes. Yes. He was a slave ship captain who saw the wrong in his actions. He saw the evil in his actions, and he stopped and he wrote that. And so it's just a really powerful, it's really powerful reminder of how we are all one, subject to error as human, but can always make a choice to change. And that choice to change for the better is never too late. Never too late. It's always the right time. And that is a historical, spiritual, and Black churches is, again, above me. It's beyond me, but I accept it, and I'm grateful for it.
Thank you.
That's a really great question. I have to write it for me first, because if you're writing for your audience, then you're for me, and then I'd be too concerned with opinion and if someone would think it was good or bad. Now, like slam poetry, performance poetry is interactive. It's a competition. So you want to write in a way that the audience will respond and you'll get a high score. And that's for a competition. But my work has to first, like I said earlier, it has to work on me first. Meaning that I have to figure out what it is. I have to listen to myself. I have to sit with myself, and I have to get the work to a place that is, it's doing the work on me first. Then when I come to a reading, you know, I decide what I'm going to share with what setting and where I'm at, but it has to first be for me. Yeah. And I think, though, too, when you get to that place where you're writing past the surface, you're going into what another one of my dear mentors, Toy Derricotte, would say is the hard poem. Like, you can write one poem, and then there's a hard poem behind that, that maybe you're not ready to face, that maybe is too difficult, that maybe you're afraid of. When you can get to write that poem and then be brave enough to share it, that vulnerability will open up the world so that others can see, oh, wait a minute. As James Baldwin said, you think your pain is your own until you read. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute. There's someone else that has experienced something like I have. And so I'm not alone. And there's great comfort in that. Yeah. Yeah.
My family, growing up, my father read poetry.
So we had love that. Happy anniversary!
He read John Smith, Frederick Pickham.
Oh, wow.
Amen, my son, he read that to Brad. And then Travis read that to one of our son-in-law. And they're writing for our worship dinner. And then Travis read it to my father's service.
Yeah.
It was just, it's like such an emotional experience to see somebody share something.
Yeah.
And so I think it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating to hear your story and hear your processes. And I just really, really touched.
Oh.
So thank you.
Thank you so much. I mean, that's a great testament to, again, that power. I feel once you do that first moment of when Kipling wrote that poem, he did his 50%. You did all of your work to put in what you were feeling, your emotion, into this poem. The other 50% happens when that same emotion, when that same intensity, all these years later, then is called up in you and anyone who then is sharing it and listening. That is a power that is unexplainable, beyond me. I receive it and welcome it, truly. Maya Angelou also said, you know, people will forget what you said, but they'll remember how you make them feel. So if you don't remember a word of my poem, I hope that I leave you feeling in the spirit of community with me. Thank you.
So as soon as I know when her work in progress is available, I will push that out to the congregation.
And the praise song poems.
Yes.
That's going to come.
Yeah,
oh, I love that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Oftentimes we, as a community, will choose a book and read that together.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Conversation. So we call it One Church, One Book. So that's a possibility.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And it is true. A lot of her poetry is available online. I pulled up a lot of it. And so I encourage you just to go to her website. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of it there. But interviews with Amanda, just a lot of just really thoughtful conversations that she's had with a lot of people. Do some work on the internet. That's it.
Yeah, my website is amandajohnston.com. And if you want to reach out to me, my contact is there. It's me. It's nobody else reading it. So you can send me a message and I'll get back to you. But thank you so much for having me again. This really was an honor.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.